Today on Fellowship in the Word, Pastor Bill Gebhardt challenges you to become a fully functioning follower of Jesus Christ.
That's a choice Moses made. We must choose to make God's kingdom first, and he does. And it's against all logic. I mean, you're raised in Pharaoh's home. This is the richest, most powerful human being on the planet. You've been given the very best treatment, the very best food, the very best education. Everything you could possibly have, you've had that. And I am certain that Pharaoh's daughter and the whole household loved him. And he chooses to trade all of that in for mistreatment and marginalization as a person.
Thank you for joining us today on this edition of Fellowship in the Word with Pastor Bill Gebhardt. Fellowship in the Word is the radio ministry of Fellowship Bible Church, located in Metairie, Louisiana. Let's join Pastor Bill Gebhardt now as once again he shows us how God's Word meets our world.
Whenever we entered the new millennium, the New York Times magazine published a series of six millennial issues probing the past 1,000 years of human history to predict some of the aspects of what they saw would be in the future. The third in this series was called Into the Unknown, answering the question that where will exploration and discovery go in the next millennium? And they wrote these words: the story of the last 1,000 years can be told as a series of great adventures. Marco Polo to China and Columbus to the New World and Darwin to the Galapagos. Adventure is as old as Homer, but plunging into the unknown in quest of knowledge is a legacy of this millennium. One that began with Leif Erikson and ended with a robot on Mars. The record of physical discovery in the past 1,000 years is remarkable. People of daring and imagination pushed back barriers of ignorance, sailed uncharted waters, and opened up a world that we all now take for granted. And in that article, they introduced someone that I had never heard of. They introduced the Chinese admiral, Zhang He, almost 100 years before Columbus had ever sailed. He commanded a huge navy of 28,000 sailors and over 300 ships, a navy larger than any Western world country was going to know until World War II. He led his fleet throughout the waters of Southeast Asia, and he reached all the way to the east coast of Africa. But what the article goes on to say is shocking. It said his adventures were amazing. He had no lasting impact. You see, there was no real interest in China for what had happened. There was no follow-up to his exploration. And because of that, Europe, not China, dominated world exploration in the centuries ahead. Said, in the end, an explorer makes history, but does not necessarily change it. For his impact depends less on the trail that he blazes than on the willingness of others to follow. The daring of a great expedition is hostage to the national will of those who remain. I want you to think about this for a moment. There's a tremendous spiritual lesson in this. This idea of whether or not someone would follow. And when you think about that word, it is such a Christian word. Follow. How many times did Jesus say, follow me? I want to stop at a brief moment, then go to the most important text. But I want you to go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 for just a moment. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. In verse 1. And here, the Apostle Paul is sort of talking about this great adventure. This is going to be, you know, this is a great adventure. He says, "For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea." He's talking about the Exodus. He says, "And all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and they all ate the same spiritual food, and they all drank a same spiritual drink, and they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ." He says, "Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness." Then God says this, "Now, these things happen as examples for us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved." Now down to verse 11. "Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." So what's the whole point of the Exodus? It's a neat story. It makes a great movie. You see, you've seen the movie. It's like, that's really neat, you know. Look at all the neat things that happened to those people. But that's not exactly what God had in mind. Now I want to go to the text in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 is a whole chapter dedicated to spiritual trailblazers. These are the people that went the route. These are heroes of our faith. We know their names. It's an amazing thing. We have decided, not God, we call it the Hall of Fame of faith. And that's probably regrettable. I mean, if you've ever been to a Hall of Fame, what's the whole point? Oh, you go and you see what all these people have done in their chosen profession and you go, "Wow, that's really neat. That's really neat. Oh, look what they did." You see, it's a spectator thing for us. We honor them by going, but that's all there is. God would never have called this chapter the Hall of Fame of faith. God would say this chapter was written so that those will follow and imitate these people in this chapter. When you read this chapter, you come to a couple conclusions. These aren't perfect people at all. There's nothing perfect about many of them. These are people who were failing people who trusted an unfailing God. No one in this chapter, by the way, ever played it safe. Not at all. That's why they're there. None of them chose a risk-free life. So God decides to put them in there so that they could be an example for you and I to follow. And I want to deal with just one family, and that's the family of Moses. And God says, look, this family existed for the reason for you and I to follow what they did. And so we'll start in verse 23. And it says, "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict." The first lesson in this is, in faith, we must choose courage over fear. It's always been this case for God's people. We must choose courage over fear. Go with me now. You can hold your place here because we're coming back. I want to go to Exodus, the book of Exodus, chapter 1. Now, I hope you understand the background from a spiritual point of view. We always think of, well, the poor Jews are slaves in Egypt, but they were sent to Egypt by God. I believe that God was really worried about the fact that the Canaanites were having already such a negative effect on the Jews who were in the promised land. And so because of that, and because there was a famine, and because of the story of Joseph, they end up in Egypt. And they end up in Egypt, 72 people. 72 people end up in Egypt. And when they leave, 400 years later, there's 2 million plus people. God used Egypt to birth his nation. And so God sends them into Egypt. And suddenly you're going to see that there is a change in Egypt, a change for the worse. A new group of people called Hikos or Hikos, depending on your pronunciation, they changed Egypt. They became suspicious of all foreigners. And so down in verse 8 of chapter 1 of Exodus, it says, "Now a new king arose over Egypt. He did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, 'Behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more than mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, or else they will multiply. And in the event of war, they will join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land.' And so they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor. And they built," he said, "for Pharaoh storage cities," he said, "Python and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. And the Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously. And they made their lives bitter in hard labor, mortar and bricks and all kinds of labor in the field, and all their labors which they rigorously imposed on them. And then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one who was named Shiphrah, and the others were named Puah. And he said, 'When you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, you shall put him to death. If it's a daughter, she shall live.'" He didn't want warriors, but he did want those who could breed. He said, "But the midwives feared God." They could have been in the Hall of Fame of Faith. The midwives feared God. It says, "Did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, 'Why have you done this thing? And let the boys live.' And the midwife said to Pharaoh, 'Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife can get to them.'" That's an interesting chat, isn't it? By the way, that was a whole class in Dallas Seminary on that verse. It was taught by Norman Geisler, brilliant apologist. And Dr. Geisler said that righteousness owes evil nothing. And about half of the students said, "You always have to tell the truth." And Dr. Geisler said, "No, you don't. Righteousness owes evil nothing." And this is one of the verses he went to. Did the midwives tell the truth there? No. But they're honored for it. You see, it's an interesting thought. It says, "So God was good to the midwives." Seminary students love that kind of stuff, you know. He says, "And the people multiplied, they became mighty. And it came about when the midwives feared God that he established households for them. And then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, 'Every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive.'" There's the edict. Oppression went to abuse, to slavery, and now to genocide. That's what happens in Egypt. And I said, we must choose courage over fear. It's kind of ironic, by the way, because the Egyptians worshiped the Nile as the life giver. They worshiped the river. And so they want to use the river to kill young Jewish boys. The midwives have a tremendous amount of courage. But then we learned something else here. We learned that in verse 1 of chapter 2, a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him in a wicker basket, covered it over with tar and pitch. And then she put the child in it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. That's interesting. Now you have somebody here who's decided that they had a son. And there's a couple things. This is Amrad and Jochebed. They aren't even mentioned by name till Exodus 6. The parents of Moses. Now I want you to understand something here. They hid the child for 3 months. Now, their lives are in danger. You have the child. It would probably cost you not only the child's life, but your life. And they hid him for 3 months. But there's something else about him that's a little bit interesting. At least I find it interesting. They saw that he was beautiful. And that's an interesting phrase. They saw that he was beautiful. The NIV says that in the book of Acts, that he is no ordinary child. There's something unusual about this child. He's only 3 months old. Now, please don't get upset with me, but normally between birth and 3 months, you know, there's not really that much going on. All right? But this child is special in his own way. He's very, very special. Stephen says in Acts 7 that he was beautiful and pleasing to God. He is clearly a child of destiny. And God uses his beauty to get him into Pharaoh's household. Listen, there's no way in the world a daughter of Pharaoh would just pick up a Jewish baby and raise it. But this baby didn't look like other babies. This baby was really no ordinary baby. This baby was special. And so that's what you see is behind the scenes here, how this works. Now, the faith of these parents saves Moses. And again, another irony. He is saved by being put in the Nile, which was to be his place of execution. Faith is following God's clear leading despite the dangers. Notice that it's also wise. They trust God, but they hide the baby. It's an interesting thing for 3 months. One of the funniest things, by the way, is they said, why'd they have to get rid of him after 3 months? And I actually read a commentator that said, because he cried too loud. I don't think we know that. Exactly what happened. Peter End says this, it was not as if the Lord reacted to the decree and thought, oh no, what am I going to do now? Rather, it's precisely by the means of this decree that God brings the deliverance of his people. God's in full control of both Moses' birth and of the external circumstances that threaten to undo it. God does not remove Moses from the situation, nor does he strike down Pharaoh who dares to oppose him, both of which he certainly could have done. Instead, God places Moses in the same Nile that Pharaoh intended the boy's harm. And he brings the boy right to Pharaoh's doorstep and has him raise him in Pharaoh's house. Why? To defeat the enemy decisively at his own game, at the very heart of his own strength. He said, this is a God who can be trusted. And Moses' parents chose to trust God. Think of how practical a lesson this is. Do you choose courage over fear when it comes to your faith? Think of a young Christian girl who gets pregnant. And what does all of her friends and everybody else tell her? Have an abortion. Don't let this ruin your life. You see, does that take courage? Does that take courage for a teenage girl to say, no, I'm going to have the baby? It takes courage to do that. There are all kinds of incidences in our life. And the choice that we have is, will you choose to have courageous faith or will you choose not to and succumb to your fear? And I think we do that so often we end up ashamed of ourselves because we succumb to the fear rather than showing courage. And Moses' parents, this could have cost them their life. But they weren't afraid. Now, back to Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 24 says, by faith, Moses, we've just moved 40 years. And please understand some things here. Moses is an Israelite by only one factor, birth. That's it. That's all he is. He's been raised by Egyptians since he's 3 months old. So it wasn't like, oh, no, he learned a lot of lessons from his mom and dad. He's just from birth. He is Egyptian in every way, social status, prestige, wealth. That's who he is. That's who Moses is. He goes on, he says, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And here's the choice he makes. Choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. That's a choice Moses made. We must choose to make God's kingdom first. And he does. And it's against all logic. I mean, you're raised in Pharaoh's home. This is the richest, most powerful human being on the planet. You've been given the very best treatment, the very best food, the very best education. Everything you could possibly have, you've had that. And I am certain that Pharaoh's daughter and the whole household loved him. And he chooses to trade all of that in for mistreatment and marginalization as a person. And this is a time of incredible prosperity in Egypt. This is the 19th dynasty. This is one of the most prosperous periods in the history of Egypt. He's an Egyptian by adoption and status and culture. And he had nothing to do with the Hebrews, except he was born one. You see, how could he make such an unthinkable choice? Because he chose to make God's kingdom first. This is an amazing thing. Back to Exodus for just a moment. Verse 11 of chapter 2. It says, now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up, that he went out to his brethren and he looked on their hard labors, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that, and when he saw that there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian, and he hit him in the stand. Now, please understand something here. That could have been courageous on his part, but that would not be advocated by God. Okay? He might have felt in his heart that he was an Israelite, but he acted like an Egyptian prince. You see, he just executed the man on his own. And it says then that he went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, why are you striking your companion? And he said, who made you prince and judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? And then Moses was afraid and said, surely this matter has become known. Now, you've got to understand what happened to Moses. I think Moses thought, no one will notice this, but if the Jews notice it, what will they do with me? They make me a hero, right? Hey, did you hear about this guy? He killed a guy who was being brutal to one of our people. But notice, the Israelites don't function that way. They don't want anything more to do with Moses than the Egyptians. It's exactly the same for them. And it's kind of an interesting thought on his part. And he conspires in an interesting way. As I said before, his heart is all Hebrew, but his actions are just like a prince of Egypt would act. And he is wrong. That's exactly what you find out in the book of Acts chapter 7 when Stephen is talking about it. It says he was wrong. He makes an extremely dangerous choice.
You've been listening to Pastor Bill Gephardt on the radio ministry of Fellowship in the Word. If you ever miss one of our broadcasts, or maybe you would just like to listen to the message one more time, remember that you can go to a great website called oneplace.com. That's oneplace.com, and you can listen to Fellowship in the Word online. At that website, you will find not only today's broadcast, but also many of our previous audio programs as well. At Fellowship in the Word, we are thankful for those who financially support our ministry and make this broadcast possible. We ask all of our listeners to prayerfully consider how you might help this radio ministry continue its broadcast on this radio station by supporting us monthly or with just a one-time gift. Support for our ministry can be sent to Fellowship in the Word, 4600 Clearview Parkway, Metairie, Louisiana, 7006. If you would be interested in hearing today's message in its original format, that is, as a sermon that Pastor Bill delivered during a Sunday morning service at Fellowship Bible Church, then you should visit our website, fbcnola.org. That's fbcnola.org. At our website, you will find hundreds of Pastor Bill's sermons. You can browse through our sermon archives to find the sermon series you are looking for, or you can search by title. Once you find the message you are looking for, you can listen online, or if you prefer, you can download the sermon and listen at your own convenience. And remember, you can do all this absolutely free of charge. Once again, our website is fbcnola.org. For Pastor Bill Gebhardt, I'm Jason Gebhardt, thanking you for listening to Fellowship in the Word.